Hi. Sorry about the slight delay. We had a microphone problem. If you want to move a bit further forward, I can project my voice, but later on I'll be doing an exercise with you where I go a bit more hypnotic, so I might be a bit quieter. And I'd hate you to be thinking, oh, that would be really nice if I could hear what he said. Lovely. Lovely, right. Okay. Good afternoon. Right. The talks I do are they're not very interactive at first because I have a train of thought and I go down it and I don't really know where I'm going with it. So if anybody interrupts, I tend to lose my train of thought, and then I'll come back to you and say, what was I saying last? Okay? So, but I will give plenty of time at the end for questions. Okay? So this is about relationships. I'll just briefly tell you who I am, because this is not an advert for me, this is a workshop. I'm Stephen Blake. I'm a thought tamer, which is the best description of what I do. I help people to tame their thoughts. And most of the things in the world that hurt us are actually thoughts. Physical pain is nothing compared with the torment we give ourselves. Just when we actually think the wrong things, or we think negatively, or we think something's going to happen, and we project ourselves in the future and we always think the worst thing that's going to happen, and that's called worry. And if you project it backwards, it's regret over something you did or didn't do. And sometimes it's just a learning that you took from an instance in your life where you've learned the wrong lesson. And if you carry that learning on as though it's true, that's what messes up your life. And that's what causes anxiety and depression and all sorts of other things. Usually stem back to one instance of something traumatic when you were younger. Now, I know it sounds a bit like psychology, oh, blame it on the youngster. But the reason for it is, in our formative years, we learn all the rules about life. And when we learn the rules about life, we like to think we've got it right. And when we learn something, so something traumatic happens to you, and you're about 6 years old, and something happens, and it frightens you so badly, it doesn't matter that if you got to 56 and you look back at it, it might look silly. Right? Sometimes it is a real trauma. And I've dealt with all sorts of things, abuse, all sorts of different issues. And it's just as easy to get rid of those as it is the trivial things. Because in that moment of fear or panic or anxiety, you're overwhelmed with chemicals in your body. And in that moment you go, I never want to feel like this again. And that brings on anxiety, because anxiety is simply looking around going, something bad's about to happen. And it makes you hyper alert so that you can spot the danger, so next time you can avoid it. And that's all anxiety is. It's hyper alertness to the fact that there's danger around you. So whatever we see is what we perceive the world is like. And if early on we learn that there are bad people in the world, or the world is full of bad things, or everything bites you on the bum, you continue through life noticing all the things that bite you on the bum. And that's what you carry on in that mode, thinking the world's like that. Whereas somebody who goes through life and has lots of positive experiences, expects positive experiences, looks for positive experiences, notices positive experiences, doesn't particularly notice the tough stuff, because that's the minority of the time. And that's how we get into this mode of being either negative or positive or somewhere in between. It's just how we perceive things. And that perception, so if somebody's negative all the time, you can't change that perception in them, because everything they've seen backs up that perception. Right? So my job is to help people to see things as they really are, not based on this old prejudice you've got about not wanting things to happen again. I'm very effective at that, and I don't like to mend symptoms. I actually look for the core, common core problem that people have. And I used to say that 99.9% of the time it's a certain thing. I now say it's 100%. It's a lack of self-worth. It's always a lack of self-worth. And that happens in everybody. Particularly it happens in women. And that's because they're more givers more often than takers. And that brings me to today's topic. If you've got a brochure or whatever in front of you, inside it is a prize draw. You can win 50% off a session with me, even my full breakthrough sessions. Or you can win a CD to deal with an issue of your choice. The main reason for that is twofold. One is so it tells me what issues people want to deal with, so that when I produce CDs and DVDs and other things, that I can actually produce the right thing for you. And the other thing, it's for you. It's for you to have this ability to put your email address on it. If you put your email address on it and you write it clearly so I can actually put it in my machine, I'll send you links to this talk today. It will be recorded. It's being recorded as we speak. You'll also get links to any other talk I do, and I'll just send you a link to it. Your option is, you can go and listen to it if it sounds interesting or not. Choice is yours. Okay? So if you leave me your email address, you will get a link to this talk. So you don't need to take notes, so you can all just enjoy yourself, really. So, on to givers and takers. In most relationships, it's not always extreme, but there is a giver and a taker. There's somebody who gives, 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 and there's somebody who likes to receive. And that sounds like there's a bad guy and a good guy. And there isn't, right? It's just two opposite ends of the spectrum. Because the person who likes giving likes others to receive them, and that's the taker. And so if you think about this, if you're not very good at receiving things like compliments, okay? So somebody says to you, you're looking good today. If you go, oh, why are they saying that? What are they after? You know? Or you look nice in that blue dress. Well, didn't I look nice in my red dress? Okay? And it's a very difficult one because in relationships in the early days, we do give each other compliments. And normally in the early days, we accept them. We probably go, oh, not me. But we do accept them. But after a while, we start to not accept them because we're givers. And so it's great to meet a taker because they've got everything you want because you give them something and they go, oh, yeah, thanks. I'll have a bit of that, right? And we go, oh, they like that. I'll give them a bit more. And they go, oh, thanks. After a year, the thanks drops. They just go, where is that? I'll give you a very good example. When I was 16, 17, I met my future wife. And we both used to smoke. So I was only an apprentice, and I bought a packet of cigarettes every Friday night as a gift for her. I wouldn't do that now. I hate smoking. But I used to buy a packet of fags. And the first week was, oh, thank you. That's a very nice thought. The second week was, oh, thanks. The third week, she put a hand out. I hadn't bought any fags, and I was in trouble. Big lesson there. If you do something often enough, it becomes expected of you. So when a giver gets in a relationship and gives, 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 there comes a time when they start to resent it. Right? And at first, all the quirky little things your partner does, you go, oh, isn't that sweet? Squeeze the toothpaste halfway down, isn't that sweet? And now you could kill them for it. Right? And what's changed? They're still squeezing the toothpaste in the middle. It's just that you thought you could actually talk them out of it, didn't you, before? And now you realise you haven't. And we assume that people do things to annoy us. We assume if something annoys us, that the other person has done it deliberately to annoy us. And assumptions are terrible things. Because if you write it down, assume makes an ass out of you and out of me. Right? So when we assume things, it's really bad for us. And the thing that we don't do is we don't tell people what we want out of a relationship. We assume that they know. Does anybody here watch Judge Judy? Ever seen it? Right. There's this wonderful female American judge, and if she has anybody on in front of her, and it's usually the woman suing the guy because she's loaned him money and he hasn't paid her back. And she'll say things like, well, did you tell him? Well, I dropped a hint. Well, did you say, no, I sort of, he knows. And she said, with guys, what you have to do is you have to go, this is wood. Which I think is brilliant. And this is what happens is we think that the other person thinks the same as we do. So I'm going to come on to a thing called personal maps. We all have an internal map of the world. It's our own personal map. It's not just about the things that happen to you, because if you have a twin brother or sister born exactly the same time, so under the same birth sign, and everything else, you're brought up by the same parents in the same house and everything else, you'll have two entirely different personalities. And kids seem to be born with a personality. I've got twin grandchildren, a boy and a girl, as different as chalk and cheese. They were born that way. They haven't developed into that way, they were born that way. So we're born with this personality that makes us notice certain things and not others. So your map of the world, every single person in here, is absolutely unique to you. Now, when we meet somebody, we actually start off by liking them in some way. There's something about them that matches what we like. It might be a look-alike. It's not just dogs that look like their owner. It's couples, right? Look at an old couple. I mean, I don't mean an old couple. I mean a couple who've been together for years. Very similar features and everything. There's just something about it. And it must have started off like that. They must have seen it in each other rather than that they've actually grown like that. So, we're born with this personality, and then we have this map of the world. Everything that's ever happened to you is on that map. Now, when we meet somebody and we say, just casually, and you're at a meeting or something, and you say, oh, I was born in Lincoln. And they go, I was born in Lincoln. You go, oh, did you, what school? And then you've got lots of things in common. And then you chat about other things. You might chat about your interests, and you say, oh, I used to do the martial arts. I did the martial arts. Then you go, oh, wow, they've got the same map as me. They haven't. Nobody has got the same map as you. And an argument, I don't do arguments anymore. I've stopped doing them since I learned about maps. All right? Because if somebody else has got their map, something that you've got, but they've got it in a different place, we try and convince them that our map's better. All right? So I go, oh, I've got a lamppost here, and it's really good because it shines on these bits. And the partner goes, oh no, mine's over here. I go, well, you ought to move it. Lot better over here. But mine's over here. Why don't you move yours to over here? And that's an argument. An argument is two people trying to make the other person convinced that their way's right. And it's neither right nor wrong. It's your way. Right? So the partner that squeezes the toothpaste from the middle, that's in their map of the world. That's where you squeeze tooth. I've always done it like this. Right? And it annoys you because it doesn't curl up and it doesn't do all the right things. It doesn't really matter. Lots of things are quite trivial. And we blow them up into this huge thing that's not really there. It doesn't exist. Because everything that happens in your head is just a thought. It's not real. None of your thoughts are real. Even when you think about something in the past that is real or was real, it's not real anymore. And it's also your version of what happened. Because if you have a funny story about something that happened and you tell it over and over again, the way the brain works is any memory that you bring out of the brain and you tell it in story form, you're now making different visual images to what was there in the first place. You might add a bit more drama to it or take a bit of drama out. Or if it's a funny story, you'll make it funnier each time you tell it. And so funny usually comes from exaggeration. And so if we exaggerate a story every time we tell it, every time we put it back, that story becomes bigger and funnier. There's no memory you've ever had that when you've told it and put it away, you haven't changed the original. You no longer have an original memory of anything you've ever told or thought about. Because if you think about it again, it changes. So nothing's real apart from the things that happen in the now. I don't believe in the nothing's real scenario, because you know, somebody comes around with a wood and smacks me around the head, it's going to hurt, isn't it? I can't go, that bit of wood isn't real. It's just molecules with lots of spaces in between. It doesn't work like that. So thoughts are just thoughts. So you get into a relationship with a taker. And the taker goes, yeah, yeah, I'll have some of that. And eventually doesn't bother anymore thanking you. And that resentment then builds up inside you. Now, the majority of people I see, the lack, it starts off with lack of self-worth, but there's also a lack of assertion. Thank you for the sound effects. And that lack of assertion means that you will become aggressive. There's a big difference between assertion and aggression. Aggression is, now you move your lamppost, right? That's aggression. And assertion is, well, my lamppost's over here, and it's staying there. Okay? That's all assertion is. You're all right with your lamppost there? I don't care if it's over there. Mine's over here. That's assertion. It's nice. It's soft. But if we find that people put on us because we're nice people, we have this thing where we start doing things that we don't really want to do. And we go, I've got to do that for so-and-so, and then I've got to do this, and then I've got to do all these other things. And then your partner gets on at you because you now seem to have volunteered for something, even though you didn't actually volunteer for it, did you? You were just asked, and you didn't know how to say no. So the art of assertion is to say no in such a way that the person actually enjoys the fact that you've said no. Okay? And there's ways of doing that. A very good example is I had a young lad working for me, and he was quite a nervous character. And he did bookkeeping and all sorts of other things. And I had to do his appraisal for further training. And he wanted more courses on bookkeeping and all that. And I said, no, what I'm going to do with you is that I said, I want you to put you on an assertiveness course. And he went, oh, I can't do assertiveness. And I went, yes, you can. You can't do aggressiveness. And if you do assertiveness, you never get to the point of needing to be aggressive. Because when we're aggressive, it's not with the other person. It's an anger we have in us that we've got trapped into this thing again. Somebody asks us to do something that is not our responsibility and we agree to do it, we're not angry with them. We should be, shouldn't we? Can you do this for me? Can you babysit me for 5 hours? Yeah, okay. What do you get out of it? Nothing. Forgot where I was going there. So, you don't know my train of thought, so I'm going to look at my notes for a change. Okay, so assertion. Sorry, no. So this young lad. So I said, oh, I want you to become assertive. And he said, I don't understand you. And I said, well, this is what you do. If your boss comes up to you one day and you're really busy and you've only just got enough time to do all the work you're doing, and the boss comes up and says, I want this report by 4 o'clock. At the moment, you go, oh, yeah. And then you'd be trying to do two things, both to please the boss. And either way, you're going to be in trouble, because if you do the thing he's asked you to do, you'll be in trouble for not doing the other one. Or if you don't do the thing he's asked you to do, he's probably relying on it now because you've said yes, and then you'll be in trouble for doing that. And he went, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. I said, so all you say is, thank you, boss. Yes, I'm quite happy to do that for you. However, I do have this to do as well. And as hard as I try, I can either do this or this. Which one would you like me to prioritise? Okay, that's assertion. I regretted it a week later when I went to him at 4 o'clock and said, can you get this paper done? And he went, do you want me to do that? All this thing I'm doing. And I said, grasshopper, you learn well. I get somebody else do it. So that's the difference between assertion and aggression. If anybody's struggling with assertion, I suggest you get a book on it and just read it from cover to cover, but carry it out and just try different things from it, and you'll be amazed at the difference it makes. Also to the other people, because at the time of saying yes to them, you're agreeing to it, but then you get niggly with them the next time they ask you, or when something else happens and you go, oh, can't be bothered again, or you start avoiding them, or you block them on Facebook or something. Something happens, right? Okay, so there's loads of stuff. I just really need to keep an eye on the time because I was late coming in. Right, I'm going to do an exercise in about 5 minutes or so. Okay. Right. One thing I often do with clients is I talk about trying, because trying is not quite what you think it is. If you say to somebody, have this on my desk for 4 o'clock, please, and they go, I'll try, do you expect that on your desk for 4 o'clock? No. No way. You know that they'll seem to work furiously on it, but you know it won't quite get there. Okay? So when people talk to me about, I've tried everything, I've tried that, I go, but I don't want you to try. I just want you to do it. And they don't understand the difference. So I'll hand them something and I'll say, just try and pass me these keys. And they put them out like that and I stand there. And then they go, and they go, you're trying, aren't you? And they go, yeah. And I still don't take it off them. And they go, see how trying doesn't work? Trying is the very knowledge that you won't succeed with it. I'll give it a try. You're actually saying before you start, well, it won't work anyway, so I'll just give it a half-hearted go at it. If you can't sleep at night and you try and sleep, try is the exact opposite of sleep, right? So when you can't sleep at night and you go, got to be up at 5 a.m, you know, got to get to sleep. It's the exact opposite of sleeping, which is just letting go of everything. It's just, you know, let it go. Okay.
May I ask you a question? I have 12 years on notes, so I can't get to sleep at night.
I'll talk to you later, also, because I've got time, but yeah, come and see me. Okay, so. Right. Is anybody, well, I'm not asking you to show of hands or anything, but if you've got a control freak for a partner, and you'll recognise that, there must be an academy they go to. Listen, they're so damn good at it. Eh? They know how to do it. They take things that they say you're thinking, and then they make you feel guilty about it to make you do something else that they want you to do. How clever is that? Where do they learn that? Right? It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. When we think we know what other people think about us, first of all, it's none of your damn business. Right? Nothing to do with you. Whatever anybody thinks about you is their problem. Right? So I've probably got some nodding heads in the room here going, yeah, this guy's quite good. But there was somebody here going, I wish I hadn't sat in this lecture. Okay? And it doesn't matter. Because I'll come here and give it my best shot. And I did actually have an audience once where a woman sat there with face like thunder. And I didn't look right. I normally scan the audience and sort of see what's going on. But she was slap bang in the middle. And every time I scan like that, I thought, she looked as if to me to sort of like shrivel up and die, will you please, quick. And it was horrendous. And I met her afterwards, and she got rid of her husband, and then her face beamed. Because she sent him off like a little dog, you know, get off, I'm going to see Mr. Blake. And when he went, I said, oh, what's your problem? And she said, he's cheated on me. I said, oh, I can understand the sad face. And she went, I said, how long ago was that? She said, 40 years ago. And I said, haven't you forgiven him? She said, no, I've got him by the balls now. So So she had 40 years of misery just to teach him a lesson. Well, what? But the face changed. You're quite a pretty woman, but, you know, this real sad face. I don't look at it. Okay. Right, you can't change other people. You can only change you. And when you change you, I'm going to contradict myself. When you change you, you change other people. Right? You can't set off to change other people because they'll resist. If you change you, you change others. So in a relationship, for instance, if you're near the end of a relationship or you think you're about to split up, if you think, oh God, I'm going to split up, oh, I don't want to split up, oh, I wish we wouldn't split up, oh, we're going to split up, I don't know why we're going to split up, oh, and you go like that, you concentrate on splitting up. The mind doesn't understand negatives. Whatever you concentrate on, is that you'll look for every opportunity to do that. So mustn't split up is just split up. Take the negative words out. Anything that you think about, take the negative words out, see what's left. You know, like, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Take out the mustn't, I have a chocolate biscuit. Right? And the brain works on that because it doesn't particularly work greatly in language. It goes by the picture you form. And so when you think about breaking up, you're thinking of the sadness, you've brought the emotion on the sadness and everything else. If you carry on in that mode, I guarantee you, you will break up. Right? Because you'll be in that mode, you'll be watching everything they do and be going, oh, that's another sign that he wants to break up with me. You're probably totally wrong, because we're all terrible at mind reading. And if I've got time, I'll talk to you about that. So, if there's something that you're thinking and it's negative, and this applies to anything in life, not just relationships, I want you all to pop your hand out now. One hand. Just pop your hand out. Think of something negative that's bothering you at the moment. Okay? And when you think of that negative thing, just understand the negative bits in that statement. All right? So, pop it on your hand. Take it out of your head, pop it in your hand, give it a size, a shape, a weight, until you make a real object on your hand. So that's your problem, right? That's the thing you don't want to happen. Now what I want you to do is flick your hand over, like that, and the back of your hand will remind you that that was the thing you didn't want, so it's gone now, hasn't it? It's fell on the floor. So you can all put your hands down now, right? So what I want you to think of now is, if you see the top of your hand, imagine you've got positive written on the back of your knuckles and negative on the palm of your hand. So you went negative, this is what I don't want to happen. If you flick it over, you've now gone positive. So what is the exact opposite of your negative thought? That was what you don't want to happen. What do you want to happen? All right? Has everybody got that? Were you able to flip it over in your mind? This is all you need to do to change negativity into positivity. You pop your hand out, you visualise it there. As soon as you visualise it coming out your head in there, you no longer have it. And if you tip it down, it's gone. You now need to think about the positive thing that it could be. So in a relationship, if you're at the end of that relationship, what's the exact opposite of the end of a relationship? Beginning of a relationship. When it's at the beginning, it's brilliant. Squeeze the toothpaste however you like. Okay? You're in that euphoria of love and you're filled with chemicals. You never get ill when you first go out with each other. It's just brilliant. It's the most wonderful thing. And we allow it to taper off and taper off. If you start thinking about what was it like when we first got together, what you'll start to do is you'll change. You will become the person you were at the beginning of the relationship. Now, they have a chance then to recognise that in you and fall in love with you again and actually become the same themselves. Or they might just be the person that you need to leave anyway. Okay? Because you can't change them. Sometimes things have just gone too far down it. Another issue is things in the past, like the woman who said her husband cheated on her 40 years ago. Some things we just have to let go of because it doesn't do anybody any good. You just have to literally let that go. And you can do that with your thoughts as well. Because when we think about something, because it's made in pictures and other sorts of images, you can actually change that image. Right? You can take that feeling and change it. You can spin it around, you can do lots of different things with it. One of my favourite ones I do, and this is for people who've had a bereavement, is if they come along and they're really sad many years after the death of somebody, I typically ask them, well, just think of that person now, and what picture do you see? And they'll have an image of that person either in the coffin, dying, or in one case, being murdered. If you take that image and you change it, you can do what you like with it. You can shred that image, you can shrink it down and push it away from you, because we all know that things further away from us can't harm us. So you can take that image, shrink it down, push it away from you. And now think of the happiest time you ever had with that person. If you bring that image to mind, every time you think about them, if this old image comes in, shrink it down, throw it away, bring this new image in and bring it tight up to you, bright, bold, and remember the good times you had together. Because if somebody dies, even at a young age, you're remembering the 1 minute they died in. You're not remembering the 28 years or the 50 years or the whatever of how long they lived. Something that you can celebrate, the fact that you had them for that length of time. Right? If we just focus on the missing them, that's what we get. We get that feeling more and more of missing them. We have to focus on what we want to think and believe and feel. And I'm just going to give you a quick exercise to show you how easy it is to change your feelings. And this is just by body shape alone. So, the thing for joy all around the world is the arms outstretched and sort of, you know, wow, really joyful. And you see that anywhere in the world, even with tribes that have never seen the outside world, would do that as joy. People who are born blind do it naturally. So they can't have seen anybody else do it. And the opposite to it, I believe, is that we shrink in when we get sad. And if we get depressed, we're almost like, I'm so sad, I don't want you in here either. Right? And we block everybody else out. And you don't see people go on the road like that and go, oh, they're depressed. But we're doing it on the inside, and I'm going to prove that to you now. So I just want you to think of something happy and throw your shoulders back. Right? You don't need to put your arms out, but just throw your shoulders back, head up tight, upright, and just in a nice posture, and just think of something really lovely. Okay? And as you do that, I'm going to ask you to fold up and go down, down. And try and hold on to that nice feeling. Just go down on yourself and get down towards your lap. Don't come up from it. And you'll notice now that you're not able to keep that happy feeling. So while you're down there, I want you to... No, I did tell you you could come up. So while you're down there, I want you to think of something sad. Not too sad. And while you're down there with feeling this sadness, I want you to come back up into that joyous position. Put your shoulders back and head up and try and hold on to that sadness. And there's a lot of smiling faces looking at me. Right? Because the way the body feels, it traps all the energy that we have about things. When we release it, it's different. This is why exercise is a brilliant thing if anybody's depressed. But if they're depressed, they don't want to do any exercise. Right? Because anxiety, depression, all these sorts of things are safety blankets that we learn when we're younger. We build this little safety blanket that says, with anxiety, oh, I'll look out for it and I'll avoid it next time. Or with depression, we go, I'll hide in my little black hole and when it's all finished, I'll come out. And depression comes on just like that. It's not that it's not from your thoughts. It's just that it's from your unconscious thoughts associating with something that goes back to that original time of some trauma in your life. It's just your way of dealing with it or not dealing with it. And I only twigged to this the other day. Everybody I help It's either about their way of dealing with it or their way of not dealing with it. It's one of those two things. And it's usually this lack of self-worth. And we install it at an early age and then we just don't get rid of it because we don't think we're worthy of it. So when our partner, the taker, tries to give us any love or affection, we actually go, oh, no, not me, no, fine. No, no, I'll be all right. And when you reject things, it's terrible. I often have people come to me and I say, well, you know, they'll complain about their partners or whatever. Oh, they never say anything nice, never do this. And I say, okay, I'll pick something up and I'll say, here you are, have that. What I want you to now tell me is that you've brought this as a present, and it's the most wonderful present ever, and you've put a lot of thought into it, and you want to give me it because I've been really nice to you. And they play along with it, and they go, yes, I bought you this present, spent a lot of money on it, and a lot of thought and time and energy. Here you are, Steve. And I go, thanks, and I put it down. And their face changes. Don't forget, this is a pretend present, right? I own it anyway. It was mine. And the face changes. And I go, so how does it feel when you're rejected? That's just the once. Every time somebody gives you a compliment and you go, oh no, not me, I'm fat, I'm ugly or whatever, you reject them. Are they going to continue to give you presents? So the last thing I'm going to talk about is gratitude. Gratitude is about accepting all the things that are wonderful in your life and looking for them. And as you look for them, you find them. And you get more of them. Right? Whereas if you look for problems, you get more problems. You look for gratitude, you're looking for all the good things in your life. I would suggest when you leave here today, every time you go to bed, you think of three things in life that you're grateful for. Doesn't have to be the same things every night. In fact, try and look for different ones. And if you can think of three things in the day that made you happy or made you smile or were really wonderful, what will happen is the next day you'll be looking for the three things to remember to go to bed with. Whereas if you go to bed with a problem, all that happens is you go problem, 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 and in the morning, if you get any sleep, the brain goes, hey, don't forget you've got a problem. Okay? Right, okay, anybody wants to see me? I've just got one slot at 3 o'clock. I'm here all day tomorrow. I'm giving a talk at 3 o'clock on the functioning of your brain. It's a thing I invented and it's called brain bargaining. It's how you talk to your brain to get it to work for you because it works on automatic and you don't. Okay, if you leave the prize draw forms here and you've filled in the email address, you'll get a link to this talk. I've been Stephen Blake, and you've been absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much. You may applaud now.